might get some late comers, that's fine. Very, very welcome, Secrets of Desperate Performers. These are, have been rather desperate performers, and often they're all doing various shows. Luke Wright here is doing Poetry Boy Band at the Pleasance, he'll tell you more about that later. He's a performance poet and stand-up. Deborah Jane Appleby, she's a stand-up comic, doing a show called Into the 21st Century?
Journey to the 21st Century.
Journey into the 21st Century. She won the Funny Women, 2005 Type of Funny Women competition. Hi peeps, come down the front if you can cope. Far down the front as possible. We don't have a go at all at the audience. And then on to the lovely Tommy Wallabies, who's a Finnish stand-up comic who's been in this country since April and has been storming through, and he's doing lots of guest appearances around the fringe. And Martin Evans, South African comic, who spends most of this year in this country.
Yeah.
He commutes between South Africa and here. Very interesting stand-up comic. And your show is called?
AAA Stand-Up at the Pleasance.
AAA Stand-Up at the Pleasance, which I'm sure you'll talk more about. The premise of the show, oh, who's ordered food?
Yeah.
Hands up the row here between this column. Very good idea. Yeah, if any of you want to go and get drinks or anything, just go and get them. If you want to upstairs in the bar, bring them down, I'll call that. And the premise of the show is I'm going to ask some generic questions about their professional life. And at the end of each round, I'm going to ask you guys to decide who's been the most honest. So they might be telling the truth, but you might think it's lying, or they might be lying and you might think it's the truth. Okay? So I think we'll start now. So I've introduced everybody. I'm Sabrina George, except for myself. I'm the stand-up comic myself. I'm doing a show here at 7:10 every night called Crime Comedy Week, because I come from a family of criminals, so I could be lying as well. As the chair, you don't vote on me, so it doesn't really matter. So very, very welcome. I'm going to start off by asking, I think I'll start off with Luke, because you're in two disciplines. Hi, girls. Or is it Guy? Mm-hmm. Oh, no, that's the way to go.
Never tell these days, sweetheart.
I'm not going there just yet. I thought I'd let the audience do that would sneak out. So, Luke, as a performer, what do you consider are the qualities you you enjoy presenting to an audience?
What do I enjoy presenting of myself?
Anything.
Of my personality. I like taking the piss out of myself. That's the best thing to do when you're performing. Then you don't come across too arrogant. And I like taking the piss out of other things. But it's generally like taking the piss. It's a sort of, people often say that sarcasm is the lowest form of wit. And it probably is, but it's about as far as I can manage, really. So just sort of sarcasm, really, yeah.
So you do that in your poetry and in your stand-up?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really do stand-up anymore. I mean, I did do stand-up, but just about that. I wasn't very good at it, so I just started to do more poetry. But yeah, I mean, I do like more bits in between and chat, do introductions for poems and that sort of thing. Yeah, but mostly just sarcasm. Yeah, a bit of cultural commentary. You know, like, I get a good question. So.
Marvin, and what about you, Deborah Jane?
Oh, I'm a whinger. So, definitely. 40 next year, and so I think I've earned the right. And that's what my show is, basically. It's just me on stage for an hour. Terrible. That's no, it's rubbish. No, I was promised at all. And it's great. I got into stand-up because I wanted to do, I didn't want to be in the same job when I hit 40. I wanted to do something glamorous. So, and I can't sing and I can't dance.
Here you are.
And here I am. So, and it's just, it's a catharsis for me. Just, I look around and everything I see, it just goes, oh, come on, think, people. And I get up on stage and blast it out.
So. Marvin, what about you, young Tommy, coming from Finland? What do you think?
I just want to get attention. I do that by creating as weird an atmosphere as possible by telling surreal one-liners. And I want the audience to wonder all the time what's going to happen next. So that's how I get the attention. That's the story of my life.
Fascinating, isn't it?
I'm not very good at small talk. I just tell the facts.
And what about you, Martin Evans?
I basically like pandering to my massive ego. And I like being able to go out and speak to people. I like being able to have a rant. I like being able to have a good go at the things in society that generally piss me off, that if I was a normal consumer or a normal punter or a normal person in everyday life, I wouldn't have an outlet for. And being on the stage is basically the best opportunity to have a go at society, but generally not being sued. So it's about as much fun as you can. If you tried it on radio, for example, if you were a radio DJ or a presenter, and you said half the things you can do in terms of stand-up, I'd probably be jailed by this stage. So it's basically an opportunity to just get out what's on your chest. To say it's a kind of thing for your ego, coming up to somewhere like Edinburgh and seeing how many punters have actually come, not necessarily just for comedy, but for the arts as such. And it is a massive lift, because performing around the country, sometimes to poxy little rooms of 5, 10, 20, 30 people, whatever the case may be, and it's a bit like, what are we doing here? And you come to Edinburgh and you go, oh, I understand now, it's all about paying £2,500 for a box room for a month and standing in the rain and flying. That's why I'm doing it, you know. It's all important for me. I basically just like handing out paper at the end of the day.
You're justified Edinburgh as well. You're thinking, I'm paying for this, I'm going to enjoy myself.
Well, okay. I don't know about the enjoyment part about it in terms of the money aspect. It's more of, it's just the opportunity to perform. And I mean, like the thing, I just need to dance kind of stuff. We all have a performer inside of us. A lot of us just like to embrace that side. And for me, it is basically just getting up on stage and making a tit of myself every night.
Okay, quite a bit. Quick show of hands. Who do you think has been the most honest? Luke Bright. Deborah Jane Appleby. Oh, one vote, Deborah. Very well done. What about young Tommy Wellies? One vote. Fantastic. Martin Evans. God, nobody else thought, all the rest of you thought they were lying. Martin, you won.
Hey.
Hello, people. Very, very welcome. Come down the front if you can. Now, the next question is one of the things, because I do stand-up, and one of the things that I find fascinating about stand-up is people who come from exceptionally different backgrounds and who manage to convey to a whole room full of people what they're talking about, where they're coming from. And the person I most admire, and it sounds like that have seen nothing in common, is Richard Pryor for this reason, because he's born in a brothel to a prostitute mother and a pimp for a father. Go and see his daughter Rain's show. It's very, very good, Rain Pryor. And he was black, and he's from Tennessee, and he was, you know, brought up really through the 40s and early 50s. And yet he can talk to just about anybody in the English language, and they get where he's coming from. And I think that's absolute genius. You know, I'm middle class, parents South African, born in Canada, hippie background, you know, all this. And I find it quite, and I'm doing the show about being a criminal, which I am, was. And it's kind of interesting to try and convey to an audience, you know, the believability factor. And I find that kind of interesting. That's one of the reasons I admire someone like Richard Pryor, apart from being incredibly funny, is that ability to cross-fertilise across to a massive amount of audience. So one of the worst questions I'm going to ask, I think I'll start with you, Martin, the other way around, so it gives Luke some thinking time, is who is the person that you most would like to have been or written their material that's not necessarily connected with you? And what would be the reason for that?
Well, I mean, from a comedy perspective, I mean, there's a lot of people within comedy have a certain heroes as such. I mean, mine being Bill Hicks, which is pretty much everybody's hero to an extent. He said things 10 years ago that are relevant and pertinent today. But from other perspectives, I grew up in South Africa. I grew up in a time when apartheid was there, where it wasn't a pleasant place to be. I was an exile, so to speak, in 93 because I'm going to go to the army. And then I learned the different voices of what was going on. Not necessarily funny things, but truthful things. Reading the works of writers and poets in South Africa who were banned artists, or listening to the music of Fela Kuti and just going, actually, there's a different voice. It doesn't have to be about comedy. It's just inspirational things are basically what affected me. Comedy is not actually something I can honestly say that affects me in a big way nowadays. When I hear another act, I either laugh or I don't, or I admire them or I don't. It's not basically something where I go, I want to be that person. I realize I'm my own person nowadays, and I have my own voice due to the upbringing that I've had and the effect and influence of my life and my society. So I don't actually take anything from one person anymore. I now look at the entire scope of things and I go, right, everything has fed me over the last 30 years of my life, just a little bit from somewhere. Good and bad has affected me. So basically what I have now is very little singular influence. I'm now affected by every bit of information that's ever gone into my body, basically.
What about you, young Tommy?
You can leave out the young.
He's got a beard. For, this is being broadcast, by the way. He's got a beard for those of you who don't know, to make him look older. He looks 12 without the beard.
It works. So, the person I would most likely most want to be is Bill Hicks as well. because I admire his style and how he has so much attitude in the message. But the comedian who has affected my career the most is Emo Phillips, since I can really familiarize myself with his way of thinking and how he constructs his jokes. He also does surreal one-liners, so he's my second biggest hero, and, the person who's influenced me the most, Emo Phillips.
Cool. And what about you, Deborah Jane?
Influences and things. Well, Spike Milligan, Eric Morecambe. If I could have written for Eric Morecambe, that would have been a dream come true. So I'm missing up now, just saying the name. Because Eric Morecambe has a very special place in my life, because when my dad was dying, it took him about 10, and my dad had motor neurons disease, and Morecambe and Wise were one of the things that really was the only thing left that made him laugh. So that had just burned into my brain. And Eric Morecambe just had to look out of that curtain. Didn't have to say, just had to look around the curtain, and 1,000 people started laughing. And to me, that's comedy. Everybody mentions Hicks. He was the culmination of Lenny Bruce, Richard Pryor, George Carlin, Robert Klein, all these comics in America who had been going for like 30 years, and they all came together in Bill Hicks. It was a seminal thing. But Eric Morecambe for me. I think as a joke, someone once said to me, "Do you know who you remind me of? Les Dawson." And I don't mean that in a bad way. And I took that as a massive compliment, because I was phenomenally funny and another comedy hero. But yeah, Eric Morecambe for me.
And what about you? I know we're quite top heavy on comics here, so you don't have to stick to the comedy world, Luke. But what about you?
No doubt in my mind that the person I admire most in what I do is the punk rock Jonky Plot, who I don't know whether people are aware of his work. He's shamefully overlooked, really, in sort of general canon things. I mean, you could actually say that he's one of the godfathers of the modern alternative comedy scene as well, when he was doing stuff in the sort of late 70s and early 80s. And his comedy was great. You know, he now does shows for about two hours, and you know, you'll only do about sort of 6-7 poems, and most of it will just be chatting between him. He kind of has his way of mixing those sort of like brash northern club sort of one-liners, sort of like it's almost Bernard Manning stuff in it, without the racism. With actually really amazing leaps of the imagination. A very, very funny man as well, but as a poet, just phenomenal. Write the most densely beautiful poems with all this kind of imagery, but he'd write it in a way that was just completely using like the modern vernacular, and so it'd be a way that it wouldn't go over anyone's head, but it'd be so deep with imagery and stuff. And then he could get on stage and perform like in front of punks who were spitting at him with chunky bottles, and he'd convert them, and people would actually dance to his poems. You know? That's just phenomenal. And you know, back then, in the late 70s, there seems certainly much more of a youth movement now. Like people say to us now, "Oh, we've got chavs these days, that's dead art punks." And you're like, "No, they're not." I think there was a really interesting time to see people performing, to be involved in something. And I always used to, I'm moaning to like my older friends, I've got to say, "No, I've got nothing to get pissed off about these days." And then all of a sudden we did, very quickly after I said that, and there's lots to be pissed off about again. So it's good to be involved in that, but certainly he's the guy who inspired me, and the guy that I first actually went on stage to support him as well, which I was very lucky to be. So, fantastic guy, but I don't know John could have got to check him out.
Go and see him. The next, quick vote on that actually. Come down the front, we've got some seats down the front here. We've got 4 seats here, we've got 2 on the side there. So next, quick vote then on who's been the most honest. Martin Evans, hands up. Tommy Wallamies. Deborah Jane Appleby. Oh, very good. And young Luke Wright. Right, Deborah Jane, very good, very good.
Cheers, work every time.
And the next question, actually, Luke, I'll come on to you, because it's sort of going back to, it's continuing from what you were saying. What first, there's 2 seats down the front if you want to come down the front. All right. The next question is for Luke. What was the pivotal moment that got you to actually stop thinking about it and actually do and go up to perform?
I should have been a band. We were rubbish. We were so bad. We were about 15, and we sounded like, we wanted to sound like Blur, but we had the musical ability of Oasis, which is a bad combination. They were really terrible. And so I used to write lyrics, and I was much more into writing lyrics than music. I could be played guitar. And so I went to watch a gig with Sean Block, like Martin Young, who writes for the Independent Sunday every week. And we're also about pop poetry stuff, really accessible. I've never sort of seen people getting on stage and do that. I thought poetry was like I'd gone to school. I thought it was all kind of charged with lightning aid and crap about my daffodils and that sort of thing. And so that was the moment I just thought, I want to do that. And I was actually totally blown away that, but, you know, it sort of interests me much more than I've seen on stage before. So that was the moment. And I think within a month, I was on stage doing stuff. I was also really inspired when the first time I came to the Edinburgh Festival. I was really in awe of all the comedians who were Daniel Kitson walking around, just seeing their stuff. They were fantastic. And just the idea that I've always been really interested in people who can get on stage and make people laugh, but actually have a point to make. And I suppose it's what you guys said about Bill Hicks as well, you know, who actually got something to say and can sort of get some really interesting ideas across without sounding like they're preaching to you, really. And to be able to make you laugh, and that's a great talent. So I think it was that moment when I was about 16.
And did you have to make a phone call, or did you just ask somebody?
I actually asked my English teacher at college if I could get on stage and do this. They did this for Friday lunchtime thing when I was at college. And people used to get up there and sing songs and stuff. So I did poetry. And everyone hated it. I mean, this is like on the concourse of college where all the lads hung out and got a concourse and all their Kappa tracksuits and stuff. And you can imagine a more unfriendly venue to get up there and start reading poetry at people. So my first gigs were awful. I used to go and support bands.
But what about you, Deborah Jean Appleby?
I think it was my 35th birthday. I think I decided, like I said before, that I didn't want to be in the same boring IT job when I hit 40. I wanted to do something glamorous. So I thought I'd make a film. I'd be a film director. Because the last thing I wanted to do was be like front of camera, front of stage. And my God, is it a boring thing to do? It's pretty, you know, trying to make us, you know, it's great fun writing it and thinking and working, learning how to operate cameras and all the angles and stuff like that. But really, it's most of making a film is having to talk to people, phone them up, and get them to the right place at the right time. And it's like an office job. All of a sudden, you know, it's like a secretary with a camcorder. Shit. And not, you know. I'm thinking I'm going to be the next Ridley Scott, I'm going to be the next Nora Ephron, this is fantastic. No. So I spent a year doing that and getting absolutely nowhere with it. But I'd always dragged friends to comedy gigs because I've always been a massive comedy fan, thanks to my dad. And people saying, you could do that. But wow, I grew up in Keith in West Yorkshire, you know. Comedy was on television, you know, or it was Ben Elton at the City Varieties and stuff like that. It's not something you could do, you had to be an Oxbridge footlights kind of person. When you come to then I moved to London when I was 35, and you go to an open mic gig and you go, my God, these people are shit. I'm funnier than this in my sleep. And so I booked myself on one of these courses, stand up comedy course that you can do, and went through that and took it like a duck to water, did the showcase at the end, went really well, and started phoning up and doing these open mic gigs, and 2 years later, but then. So it just seemed to, just something that I decided I wanted to do. I wanted to do something different, something glamorous.
And it is, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's very ego fueling, it is, when it goes well.
It's more glamorous than a sort of empty student union.
One of the great things about stand-up, for those of you who've never been to an open spot circuit, is care in the communities, psychos, people who have the most extraordinary idea of what comedy is, are allowed to come and do their 5 minutes of whatever it is. And it is incredibly encouraging to those of you who might be feeling a bit nervous about being a comic, you go to a few of those and you go, yeah, absolutely anything is better than some
it's
of the open nights.
It's like the rural start for me, isn't it? It's the most exposed. Although, you know, basically a comedian's job is to get on stage and on the whole lie to people to make them laugh. It is actually like the purest, you know, it's just somebody on stage exposed. And that's what's so cool about it. It's just it's people, you know.
It's something a lot of actors are terrified of, because if for an actor, if something's not going well, they can blame the director, who's been acting as an admin person, or they can blame the costume, the wig, the script, the other person not feeling the correct lines. As a stand-up, you, honestly, we'll come on to that later, but you can be as exposed as you can be standing on the floor with no mic, no lights, whatever, and this is called a gig in some cases. And you just have to do what you do with whatever you get, and that's... probably about as well as we'll get onto that a bit later. What about you, Tommy? What was your pivotal moment?
I actually went to business school, which is not the most common birthplace for comedians. And at the end of every course, we did a presentation, and I started adding jokes to my presentations just to get the attention, since no one was really listening. So... I would make really bad puns about like income tax or like, sexually related. I'm not gonna explain that one, but it might be the reason why the women make more money in the porn industry. Jokes like that. I usually also impersonated the professors. And they didn't really like that one, and they started lowering my grade, some of them. And at one point I realized that I would rather just make people laugh on stage than get a good grade. And I didn't mind the fact that they took points out of my grade. So that's something of a pivotal moment. And when I was starting I graduated a year ago in March. So... just before that, I started wondering what should I do, and people had told me after some of those presentations that I should consider stand-up comedy, and I didn't really know what it was, since it's a very new thing in Finland. So I started surfing over the internet and trying to find out about the career, and started borrowing books from the library and reading about stand-up comedy, and I actually booked my first gig. And my first ever gig was 10 days before my graduation. And it went fairly well, so that's when I decided to just toss away the business career. I haven't regretted that one.
Thanks, Tommy. What about you, Martin?
Well, basically, sooner or later, I've burned every bridge career-wise that I could possibly have done. Realized I was cack at just about anything I put my hand to. Been a born show-off and a natural sort of communicator since I was a kid, and I really wanted to get into it. And I'm South Africa. This is a nation known for bringing us such comedy greats as apartheid and AIDS. Not really a nation known for its fantastic cracking sense of humour. So I've grown up with this whole British influence of everything in terms of comedy, and this is where I've been living for a while. This is where I wanted to be. And I had this girlfriend who was South African, which is very unusual. I've never gone out with a South African girl before, and she was arranging, as part of Care International, some Iraqi war relief benefit. And it had John Hegley on the bill, and Simon Munnery, and Dave Gorman, and me. She got me on to do a spot. And I think because I had written specifically for that night something related to the whole Iraq conflict, etc., I had a fantastic night and a huge response. And I was like, right, this is something I'm going to do. But the fear of performing is one thing that most people get put off by. You know, the idea about, oh, it must be the scariest job in the world. And part of it is, yes. But once you've approached the kind of going up in front of people and speaking and you're confident with it, it's much easier. But I was on the banks of the Seine in Paris with this woman who I felt I was madly in love with. And the night before, she'd explained to me that she'd been shagging other men and had completely broken my heart. And I wanted to leave her. I didn't want to be with her in Paris. I just wanted to get out. But her mother just developed a brain tumor, and I was kind of just being there for her, and it was torn to pieces. And we had the time out for Paris. And there was a picture of Daniel Kitson performing in Paris. And there's one thing I don't like about traveling is being a tourist. It's all fine and well, but you always just want to be part of the society. You know, you want to be sitting, commuting almost with everybody to work. And I said, wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it just be amazing to be in Paris and to be a performer, to be here as someone who isn't a tourist, someone who's got a reason for being there. And she turned to me, as I said, she just broke in my heart as it was and said to me, I was useless, I was lazy, I was this, I was that, I was never going to do anything. And I was like, right, fair enough. I got back to London and I just started immediately arranging gigs, booking gigs with a sense of, can show you. And it was exactly what happened. And from the first few gigs to start off, speaking of the open mic circuit, walking out there, your confidence levels are this size. And there are some absolute lunatics on the circuit, okay? And you can't, I mean, your gran, when she's got a headache, is funnier than most of these people. And you're just like, okay, fair enough. This is actually not that hard. And it's all fair and well. Someone said your first gig is to speak in front of 1,000 people. Most people would probably shit their pants. But the fact of the matter is, when you're doing an open mic circuit without a mic, in a poxy room above a pub somewhere, and there's nobody there except for a few of the comics who are actually laughing at your material, you're going, yeah, this is it. This is something I want to do. And I came up to Edinburgh last year, and after having done all these poxy little gigs, seeing that there are actually people who come for comedy, obviously not at the level I was at that stage, or still am necessarily, but people here to see performance, I went, this is something I want to do. It's not an ego thing to the greater extent. I think a lot of comics, unlike people on Big Brother, for example, who just have a fame thing, they want to be famous, and they're famous for nothing. I don't want to be famous, I just want to be able to do what I do. And if the sort of byproduct of that is that by success you do get recognition for your craft, that's great. There's very few other jobs. I mean, if you are the finest IT support help desk worker in the company, you don't really get any real job satisfaction other than the fact that you know how to fix a few bugs in Windows. You know, it doesn't really work for me. I like the idea about going out, being able to produce something, people coming afterwards going, I really like that set, that was absolutely fantastic. What you said moved me or told me something that I've been thinking of, but haven't actually maybe verbalized in my own head. That's it. It's performing. It's fantastic.
Excellent. So, quick round then. Who's been the most honest? Starting with Luke, raised hands. Some votes there, Luke. And for Deborah Jane Appleby? Some nice votes there. And for young Tommy Wallamies? Oh, very good. And for Martin Evans? Oh, great. Tommy. Very, very good.
It was the young that did it.
Yeah. The youth in you that did it.
I have a small beard as well, but I grow it, so I look younger.
When I get older, I'll be less honest.
You'll be more, well, you might be lying. It's the thing is that they believe you to be telling the truth. What is, this is another subject that most comics spend most of their time when they're talking to each other about, is the worst gigs. We sort of sell the best gigs, but we actually talk amongst each other about the worst gigs we've ever done and the extremes. As we were saying, we get on the open spot circuit, there are some very extreme people and their behaviour has to be encompassed in what we do. One of the worst gigs I've ever done, I was in a very posh area of Hertfordshire. I was invited with three comics to go and do a gig. I was either the headline or the finishing act, depending on which status you like to give me. But the first guy on was relatively inexperienced but very confident, and I said, do you want me to just sort of like compare you in, because it's quite a strange environment. There was no stage, there was a mic on a chair, and the audience seemed to be standing all over the place. It was a complete mess, and there was a toilet behind me, and there was an exit out onto the street there, which people were coming in and out of. And this guy got up, and he had cigarettes thrown at him, he had live matches thrown at him, he had bottles thrown at him. He got very, very angry. There wasn't much comedy, actually, except for in the retelling, possibly. But he was incredibly violent. There was absolute chaos going, and it was absolutely mad. And the next guy, the middle act, was someone I'd never met before, never seen before, but he said he'd been in the SAS, and most of his material was about the SAS, so I thought, he can handle things, that's fine. I'll quickly whip off to the loo. I went off for about 4 minutes, and I came back to find that the mic was on the chair and this SAS guy had disappeared completely. The main member of the audience, as you might call it, was this rather big, very heavy-set man who kept on throwing these bottles at the first act, and he disappeared. And the guy, the promoter, turned to me and he said, right, Sabrina, you're up next. And I did 45 minutes, because we were supposed to overall do 2 hours, and the other guys hadn't lasted very long. I did 45 minutes, and I had quite a good time, and I settled the audience, and, you know, it wasn't the best gig, but it was like, it became much more like a gig. And I was quite pleased with myself, obviously. Got a round of applause, came off, and these people came up to me, and they were going, God, you were so brave, you were so brave. And I was just like, well, thank you very much. And what had happened was that this guy who'd been the main culprit, the ringleader and throwing all this stuff, had gone to the toilet, unbeknownst to me, and during my set had come out of the toilet and exited with his face completely covered in blood because some people had gone and punched him up in the what he'd done. And I hadn't seen him, so I looked incredibly brave. I was sitting there, well, you know, this is all terribly funny. And he'd exited stage left, and he was absolutely, he had beaten up quite a lot by members of the audience, which was quite, you know. And it's sort of something that one doesn't really expect, was extreme violence in gigs. So what the next question I'm going to do is actually ask a Martin, I think I'll start with you this time, is what is the most, probably the worst gig in any respect that you've ever done?
Nice. About a year and a half ago, I was back in South Africa. Now, again, it's a nation that's still not exactly known for its sort of political stability in certain places, and where things have changed. For example, nowadays, we have loads of really, really top-quality black comics. Taking that on a sort of tour to certain areas doesn't always work out too well because there are the redneck communities. Now, we went out to a place called Nubba Beep, okay, which sounds like something from Star Trek, but this is out deep in the Kalahari, and we went out there. This is not a nice place. The guys were drinking their, like, sort of brandy and coke out of sort of coffee percolators, right? That's the kind of level of big Afrikaans men, farmers, boers, okay, who took particular offense to the fact that A, we were funny, B, we were getting attention from the local people, not in a kind of dirty, sexy way, but just they were like, oh, something new in our little town. There was another black comic with me who was absolutely fantastic. He is definitely one of the best acts we have in the country. And in an environment,
what's his
name? David Carr.
David Carr, yeah.
Yeah, and we were traveling out, and some of the guys in the audience, you know, in that sort of thick, sort of stupid way, or instead of heckling, just being tits, okay? Saying sort of unnecessary racist comments, and like, oh, jeez. So halfway through the break, again, this is a story that ends up in violence. I myself spent my entire life avoiding getting into conflict and using my mouth to talk my way out of most situations, which has been generally effective. There was, however, a point where the local rugby team guys, who were still in their official blazers and everything, came up and a friend came by and he was covered in blood. What's happened? He's been punched. He was going outside and they were actually beating up a black guy outside. He went, what the hell's going on? And they just turned at him and started smacking him around. And I was like, well, I can't have this. I can't have this. Point them out to me. He said, no, look, don't even look. Don't look. Don't. Just, it's those guys over there. So I moseyed across to them to go and sort of like say, listen, guys, you know, what are you doing? This is a comedy gig. You can't be doing this, etc. And I got headbutted three times, punched, and it happened so quickly. And it was such a level of shock that I could just stood there. I was like, hello. Instead of going down like a ton of shits, I just actually stood there going, right. And I fought for the first time in my life ever. I felt I was defending a cause as well, and okay, I won't say I won, but I did land two cracking punches, which I've always had some dream and fantasy thing about in my life. I lamped this guy a treat, opened his nose up and his lip, and I was like, I've moved into the world of violence, and this has really pissed me off because I don't want to be a violent person. But there was some sort of level of, you've got to defend people to a world of degree as well. I've done gigs in Southeast London where they've been more racist than anything I've ever done in South Africa. So don't for one moment just think that South Africa is a racist nation. Travelling around the UK has been an eye-opener to the levels of racism. You say, people, you're from South Africa. South Africa, yeah, black people, right, on there, a bunch of bastards. You're like, Jesus Christ, mate. We travelled out of the country, we fought things in the past so we don't have to deal with this. And you travel around the world and you realise just how racist society is. And often you find yourself in an environment where you've got to fight. And often the words alone can be enough, but I've done gigs with squaddies in the UK as well. And my material's political. Now, I know for a fact that anybody who's been involved in the army, the whole concept and purpose of the army is to brainwash you and have you on their side, right? It's not that they don't have a view and opinion, but generally speaking, men who've been in Iraq to fight aren't really too keen about hearing how shit the whole situation is. It isn't Tony Blair a total twat, right? They fought for something, so they believe in it. And you're trying to do some material to a bunch of squaddies that are out there, and they are not just heckling you, they're actually wanting to go home and hurt your family kind of thing. So you've had these gigs exist all the time, but you've just got to persevere, go through with them, carry on, and just be better than them. Be bigger than them, and have more material to break them down. And eventually, you leave a lot of them, and they actually end up, oh, fair enough, mate, you're right. We had a situation last night in one of the pubs where a guy was doing his material, and he's an American guy, and he was going on about, isn't Bush a twat, etc., and this, that, and the next thing, and you know, and all these babies who've died in Iraq, and he's going, yeah, but what about Saddam Hussein? How many babies did he kill? Next thing, we've got this situation where someone is actually on the opposite side, and it can really turn aggressive and nasty at any stage. That's why this is quite a nice gig. No one's heckling. Everyone looks quite gentle.
Did it surprise you how much violence or vitriol there is in the comedy world that can come from the audience, and we know it exists between the comics, and we're allowed to talk about that. But because it really surprised me, you're there just to like mess around, maybe to make a few serious points, but generally the whole thing is about entertaining and being funny. And it really has surprised me at how something quite mild can set off this massive explosion, or nothing in the case of this.
When you're on stage and you're getting all the attention, you're being the alpha male. And that's how you decide the alpha male, like in the animal community, with violence. I don't think this comparison is totally without a point. Like, they're upset because you're being the alpha male. And that's why they're violent.
But I'm not an alpha male. Alpha. In case of those who didn't know.
You don't get a lot of violence then.
I do, yeah.
You do?
A lot, yeah. Lots of aggression. Yeah. So what...
Sort of men hate it even more if they see a woman on stage and doing things they don't believe, because they're all... Most of these violent people are sort of misogynists as well, you know, and I think that's even more offensive to see not only a puny guy, so, but a woman, my God, you know, that, so that probably annoys them in that way.
The absolute fury that you're getting the attention or something. So what about your worst gig, or the most hardest learning curve?
Mine doesn't include any violence, but I hated the audience so much that I kind of wish it had. It was in December. A colleague of mine is a first-year student at the best drama school in Finland, and it's really prestigious, and those people have a good shot of becoming a film stars in Finland. And he asked me to do a 20-minute gig for free at the Christmas party at the drama school for first and second-year students. And this colleague of mine is really nice, so I said, okay, I'll do it. And it was just insane. After I did my first joke, which usually gets a good reaction, and in the joke I make fun of myself, there were about 50 people in the audience. Everyone was just staring at me, and one of them said, "Oh." So that's what you call a great start in comedy. And after that, I was just thinking, only 19 and a half minutes left. Those people were just so full of themselves, and they hated the idea that someone came into their school, into their party, to be on stage and the center of attention. And the only jokes that in my set that they really liked were the ones where I that had a clear victim, like I was making fun of some group, because those people had so much negative energy in them that they just wanted to direct it at whatever. And after the... Due to professional pride, I did the entire 20 minutes. And after that, I just said, why don't you guys try this? And they went completely silent. And I could see in their eyes that they were actually starting to think how hard it probably is. But I hope they learned something, but I don't think they did. It's actors, so I can't stand them.
Questions.
Next.
Next, yeah, what about you, Deborah Jane?
Well, it's an easy one, really. St. Bartholomew's Medical School Student Union. Friday, May 27th, 2005, 9:05 p.m., really. I'm working class. I'm nearly 40. Both my parents died long lingering illnesses due to misdiagnosis by arrogant, godlike doctors who no one has any faith in anymore. As I say in the show, you used to be able to trust your doctor like you trust your priest. One of those clerical medical adverts are not on anymore, I guess. I was supposed to do 15 minutes. I lasted 4.5 before they asked me to leave. Because basically, they didn't want to listen to me. People got up, went to the bar, had to try and have their own interval. So I tried to shut them up in my own charming and imitable way. I think when the phrase drug-addled psycho baby killers came out, that's when it started to really turn against me. Asking some girl in particular how she handled it, you know, when she gave her first child an overdose of morphine because she'd been up too long partying. And they asked me to leave, and I was very happy to go. Normally, if a gig's going bad, you try and tough it out. But it's just sitting in a room with overprivileged, undereducated, middle class sperm washing around your ankles. I'd never wanted an Uzi more in my life. And not that I'm bitter.
So what was it, a learning experience for you every day?
Definitely never go to a medical student gig again. It taught me that I have very real prejudices, and that I can hate people as a group. Normally I try not to be prejudiced. I try to treat everybody. I'm sort of a libertarian. Everybody's an individual. Should say everybody as an individual, and find out about them personally, and then decide to hate them. No, for a complete. But no, medical students. Medical students, I am quite happy. I don't know if there's any internet, but I am quite happy to hate them as a group. Hi guys. There's only one of you. Do you hate him? Yes.
What about you, Luke?
The thing about being a poet is that you don't really belong anywhere. Nobody wants you anywhere. But at the same time, because you have this indefinable role, people think they can pick you one of the strangest of gigs. So I've done some terrible gigs. And I grew up in Essex at a place called Braintree, which is the most ironic thing in town in England, being that I was wearing a retreat. So I did have some really tough gigs when I first started out. So I used to support bands, and they were always really difficult gigs. Because, people don't want to be shouted at by some guy, especially when that guy is 16 and still not very good at what he's doing. So I did have some really tough gigs, and I did have false chucks quite early on. Worst gig I ever done, a couple of things. One was that I did a gig from the late Malcolm Harding, the comedy legend, up in, obviously, Daddy was running a gig at his pub boat.
Yeah, I run that now.
Have you done that? Yeah.
I run it.
Oh, really?
It's tough as fuck.
Yeah. I went down there once and I walked on stage and I hadn't even got through the first sentence. Someone tell us a fucking joke. And then the other, they told me to stop waffling. And I quick as a flash went, but I'm waffly versatile. Exactly. That's a funny joke. That's funny. Yeah, that's funny. But no, that wasn't there. And in the end, some guy was just like basically threatening me. And so I said, "What do you do?" And he went, "You don't want to know what I do." And I'm like, "Ooh, you look good. I'm getting you." And yeah, that was really bad. And in the end, I just started like repeating jokes that I'd read in the back of FHM when I was 14. Kind of keep them up. But one of my worst experiences, actually, I did a gig at Glastonbury, which was quite a good gig. And then there was people liking it. And one of the people who was liking it came up to me afterwards, and she was just like, "I really enjoyed your stuff, and I was great. I was a great bit." And she busted my t-shirt, and I was wearing a Nike t-shirt, like an old kind of thing. She went, "You've got a Nike t-shirt on. They're evil." And I went, "Well, I bought it second hand, so I didn't actually give them any money, and I'm not trying to change the world and leave me alone." And she went, "Couldn't you just wear it inside out?" And that destroyed my faith in my audience so much. So, yeah.
And just saying that tough gig thing, the reason I'm running Malcolm Hardy's old gig now in London, I didn't want to touch it at all.
Yeah.
But it's such a barefoot, it is such a horrible gig to do. And a part of me went, "Hang on a minute.
Yeah.
If you can actually end up taking these people who are complete bastards and you can work it, it's power to the performer."
Yeah.
And it's also good for them because sooner or later they get broken down as well. And hopefully it'll end up being a nice gig. But in the meantime, it's pretty tough. Do you want to come do it next month?
I'd love to come back and do it again. Yeah, I have fond memories. Yeah. It was fun. It was actually a fun gig because it was just so bad. It was love. It was comedy.
Well, so I've done it with Malcolm Hardy, and basically he introduces the act and says, "Mike, the shit."
So,
you have to go on. He's dead.
Yeah. That was the worst thing.
Well loved.
I did it after hours at the Pleasant Stone like a couple of years ago, and it was being hosted by Michael McIntyre. And I'd never met him before, and he was all buzzed, like, "Oh, next one's going to make this and he's that." And I was doing like, the 10-minute open spot, and it was a pretty good gig for me to do. Like, I wasn't really doing much comedy. And he introduced me, I was going, "Never met this guy before, you might be really shit. I really wouldn't expect much." And I hope Michael McIntyre got some help with that. That was really, really mean. And I actually had a really good gig, so.
Hurrah! No, because it is kind of interesting. I don't know what you guys think, but there. I mean, I've talked about the violence, which probably led it up a bit of a cul-de-sac. But there are some bad gigs which actually teach you an awful lot about what you do, and I think that's why we obsess about them so much and we talk about them so much. And I find that doing a a challenging gig for whatever reason, suddenly realising that your material is completely inappropriate, that nobody in the room actually speaks English and you've got no physical comedy, or that, you know, you've got some terribly clever material about some local issue that's being on and nobody in the audience knows what you're talking about. In central London, most of the smaller gigs, you'll have a population of, I would guess, about 60% who are actually from outside the country. And some of them don't speak English. They've put a lot of Japanese, which is very interesting. They come and look at you because they've heard about English comedy. And they're very sweet. They just smile very sweetly and they look at you. They have no idea what you're talking about.
I think mostly on those English language courses in town and getting cheerful teaching. And it's like they've been told, go learn English by going and watch a comedy gig. And there's nothing more fun than playing to six Belgian foreign language students just going.
It's an excuse though. Sometimes you have to keep this sort of your confidence and your self-belief up, because you come away thinking, everyone really hates me. Not only were they not interested, but they really, really hated me. I'm like, why the hell am I doing this? Do you know what I mean? Like, if you do, like, a big part of what you do is the idea that you've got to entertain people, and you know, not necessarily to make them like you, but to entertain people. And if you're doing the inverse of that, you're just thinking, what the hell am I doing with my life? You know, I should have gone to university.
I should have been a medical student. Popular choice, that would have been easier.
It's
quite difficult sometimes when you're doing
that.
Yeah, it's what we talk about a lot. Right, so quick vote. Who's been the most honest? Martin Evans. Grand. And Tommy Wollemies. Good man. And Debbie Jane Appleby. Yay. And Luke Wright. I think that was about a split, actually. I put half and half into it. Half and half. The next question is, I don't know whether how scary it would be, but what is it about, where do you draw your material from? Where do you get your sense of comedy from? In my case, it's generally my background and things that I've done, and because I was a criminal and because I'm middle class, apparently, I have three passports. I've travelled around, I went to a hippie school, and I find there's endless stuff there that I enjoy talking about or connecting with people over.
Passports for you?
Canadian, South African and British. I have a feeling Martin's actually my brother. My father are married 8 or 9 times. He died this year. And married many, many, many times and dropped children all over the place. So Martin could actually be very closely related. We haven't quite worked.
My mum wasn't a slut, though. It's all right. So my lineage is guaranteed. Okay.
So that, you know, I draw
that
stuff that actually. So my background tends to come out of my material tends to come out of my life and stuff. I'm not really scoring political points or talking about politics unless something blissful comes up like John Major and Edwina Curry, then it just has to be talked about. And I love emceeing because I love talking to the audience, and I often find that there's an awful lot in common with just about everybody I have with my audience and myself, and I love making material out of that, really. So that's where I would say my comedy comes from. Let's start with Luke, because Luke's that's the start of the stuff.
I'm generally quite detached. I don't really talk about my background. I don't think there's anything very interesting about a boy who grew up in suburbia and kind of did normal things that people do. Like, I mean, sure, there are sort of anecdotes and stuff and funny things that happen to you involve Nike t-shirts and that sort of thing. But generally, I would read newspapers and magazines and try and write about things that are happening. I like to, you know, I am actually interested in satire and those sort of things. What I'm trying to do at the moment, that's just with my approach, I always used to write about very detached things in pop culture, very trashy, kind of throwaway things. And I'm trying to find a way of like linking that back into sort of like emotion and sort of to be able to sort of give something of yourself away, but without sort of going me the whole time. I'm trying to sort of put it onto another issue. So it's immediately relevant for everybody to sit in the room, because there's nothing worse than in poetry that really introspective stuff, and that stuff is not interesting to hear about. I mean, however heartfelt or well written it might be, if it's totally about yourself and it's not connected to the outside world in any way, then.
It's an interesting balance getting that thing between being really honest and really talking totally about yourself and actually not talking about
whatever
yourself.
Whatever you do, they'll either say, oh, you're too self obsessed, and they'll say, you're not emotional enough, and you're hiding behind other issues and stuff. So it's trying to find that balance, really. And I think comedy just comes, and I've never been able to sit down and actually write anything funny. I can write what I think about things, and I can lay it all out, then I have to go for a walk or get a piss and wake up with a bit of a hangover the next morning. And that's when the sort of little sort of like sidesteps and the humour kind of comes from, really.
Yeah. Very good. What about you? So those of you who are just hearing sweeping doors, that was the medical students leaving. Hurrah! Welcome. Deborah Jane.
It's just things that pass in front of my eyes, basically. In the news on the street that just make me go, oh, come on, please. And that it strikes me as funny at the time. And thankfully, in this day and age, everything's fucked to high heaven. There's just an endless stream of, because I'm sort of split right down the middle. I have a great faith in humanity. I think we have been blessed, not really completely alien, but with this beautiful fluke of self-awareness, which is amazing. And so the human brain, human being, has so much potential, and we spend that potential watching Celebrity Love Island.
And wrestling.
That's it, yes. And and burning other people's children because, you know, they've got better toys than we have. Or as Doug Stanhope says, we've got all the toys, but they've got all the batteries. A good way, it's the oil crisis. And I think it's just, I wish, you know, that's why the show is about the 21st century. Because when growing up in the 70s, everything was going to be solved by now. We'd all be swanning around in white robes discussing the intrinsic values of raindrops and stuff. Lamborghini machines did all the shit jobs for us. We would have grown, we would be higher beings. And my God, we're not. And I'm just really disappointed. And in humanity, really, and I just, every time we trip up, I need to point out to my brothers and sisters, come on, we can be better.
I think a lot of comedy comes from that. I think a lot of comedians are people who are, in their hearts, quite naive and quite hopeful in a way, but also able to be very cynical about it afterwards. So you can build up all those hopes and sort of, my mate Chris, who's in my show, he's very like that. He gets so angry at things, and it comes out in a really cynical, really funny way, because he actually really wants to believe it, and I'm like that as well, and I know you are as well, and we've kind of, you know, think that'd be really great, and then you know you let yourself believe because you want to, and you can get excited about that, and then when that doesn't happen, you also have the ability to sort of stand back and be really cynical about it. I think a lot of comedians have this kind of personality.
My parents are South African, and they're not, as you can imagine, totally evenly keeled, not very happily married to each other. They never were, and all my cousins are South African, and I really don't like most white South Africans. I find them very arrogant, and I wrote a massive rant about it, and I was told I couldn't do it because it was racist, which is probably true. And one day in this club, a bunch of South Africans came in, and I did all the stereotypical stuff, which they completely understood, their meanness, their obsession about money, their arrogance and stuff, and they just hooted with laughter. They actually hired me to do this party and talk, I think, for about 2 hours. I can't remember how much it was. And the only person I could get to come down and do it, bless him, was Luke. And he gamely went on and talked about Richard and Judy, and they looked a bit bewildered. But it was quite extraordinary. It was a wonderful outlet for me to just go, you know, and I just went, oh, I don't even know what I was talking about. I just kept blistering away for hours.
A table of like 20 people, a family who came from all different parts of the world. They hadn't seen each other for 15 years. Had a meal, and what was it? It was the National Gun Club.
It was something like that. The RAC.
And it was this room, and 20 people sitting there, and then there's me and Sabrina standing at the side of the room, a little like Tony, my first microphone bit, chatting to these people as they sat there and ate their dinner. It was the strangest thing ever. It was so weird for that. It was quite cool.
But I was really hired to be abusive towards them, and it was bliss, because I was just getting it all out. They were happy, we were getting paid, and it didn't matter, because they went back to their different parts of the world and just said, well, that was fabulous. So there you go. So Tommy, what about you?
I don't talk that much on stage about my background or my attitudes, since I'm not yet good enough to make funny jokes about them. And that's because I'm in the beginning of my career. I'm just trying to be funny, trying to learn how to write a joke. So here, when I'm here in England, I talk something about coming from Finland, because I have to. I can't just go on stage and do the normal jokes, being from another country. So I'm now trying to learn the structures of the jokes. And what I do in most of my better jokes is I combine two things that have something in common but are not usually thought of as being the same. So it's kind of hard to explain. It's very technical. I'm a professional, don't worry. I'll make a living someday. And what I do is I try to get in as many different situations as possible with like different kinds of people and do different things, different hobbies. So I see how different kinds of attitudes about the same thing. I try to combine things that are not usually combined by getting as much experience as possible. I don't know if you understood anything I just said. That's what I do. I write jokes.
You have to completely rewrite jokes in English because the Finnish ones don't exactly translate, don't you? So.
Some of them translate, but very few.
It's very good. What about you, Martin?
I get my material from ignorance, really. I mean, just spotting ignorance around me, or just random things, sitting on a bus, seeing something dropped on the floor, little things just that come to you. But as Sabrina touched on, I mean, South Africa is not exactly a nation known for its nice people. I mean, if it hadn't been for the war in Iraq right now and the state that America's caused, we'd still be the most annoying assholes on the planet. So times have changed for us. But for example, going back in like my upbringing, I've got a Welsh-speaking father, I have a Scottish mother, I was born in Slough, and I grew up all over South Africa. So, and I was a political child, I was always somebody who was upset by the state of affairs. So I've taken that, and I've realized in the current culture that we're in, whether it's sort of American bashing, which seems to be the most popular sport at the moment, is my material comes from my background. It does, it affects you, because you have your upbringing, you have your realizations and your ideologies and how they affect you. And I watch things, for example, in this country, as I said, like watching Big Brother last night, and it's like, oh, Jesus, I'm not going to do material on Big Brother, but just that whole population of people who go over there. Stupid folk really dictate what you actually start to bring up. And I love the fact that you can go out there and be a bit of a smart ass for something in society, and you can go, there's just weaknesses that you abuse and see in society, and just go from there. I'm sick and tired of seeing so many stupid people on the planet. And you realize that, for example, when I went back to South Africa, the people who material I was basically using against, the Afrikaans, the Boers, the big, thick assholes, and you go up to them, you can go on stage, and as you said, you can go and do the material right to their face. As long as you're on a stage with a light here and a microphone in your hand, somehow they accept it. If I went up to a random Afrikaans man in South Africa and said, you're a big, thick, racist prick, I'd probably get snapped there on the street. But if I do it on stage, you can get away with it in a way. So it's, I like it. You're basically just, sometimes, no offense, mirroring your audience, and that can be brilliant, depending on where you are, of course.
But no one likes to think that person. No one thinks of that person. They go, oh, yeah, you are talking exactly about them, but no one wants to think that that's them.
It's like when you have something of a heckler and they always look at the person next to you. If they're the person you're having a go at, like, no, it's you, mate. Look around like that. Brilliant. All right, so who's been, who do you think, audience vote, quickly raise your hands, who's been the most honest? Luke Wright. Deborah Jane Appleby. And Tom Wallaman. And Martin Evans. Right, Martin, very good. Very, very good. Right, next question again, quite hard for some comics. Where would you like to be in 5 years' time? I'm going to start with you, Tommy.
With me? Can
you Tommy.
My strength as a comedian is more in the writing of the material than in the actual presentation, in the actual delivery. So in 5 years, I would like to be writing for television. I don't know what kind of writing, maybe sitcoms, maybe something else, maybe just jokes for some guy who presents, but I think that is my personal strength. That's all.
Deborah Jane?
Making a living from it. It being the only thing I do, comedy, whether it's writing, especially gigging, it's been a job in comedy.
Staying live performance?
Oh yeah, definitely, I do. I'm like you, I love talking to the audience as well, like MCing. But you know, you can't really make that comfortable a living just doing the gigs. But you know, write for radio, write for TV or something as well. You know, maybe the odd HSBC commercial. You know, selling Strongbow. It's really funny when you get to a certain level where you know all the comics and you see them popping up selling car insurance or something. Go, oh my God, look at that! Oh, in the Pizza Hut. But yeah, so just not doing the day job. I took 3 months off the day job to prepare for this, and it's just been fantastic. Just gigging and writing, and I really do want to do it now, so hopefully within 2 years, so in 5 years, just well established at it. Making you all laugh.
tears of joy run down your cheeks as you all love me.
And are moved and changed and leave your medical degrees.
Definitely.
Fantastic. Definitely. What about you, young Luke?
5 years. I'd like to be honest, I do make a living now out of doing poetry and writing, which is a strange thing to be doing for a job. A non-believer in some poet. But I'd like to continue doing my own stuff. But at the moment, I have to take whatever work's given to me. So whether it's teaching at school, which is really cool, sometimes, and the gigs. But I'd like to be in a situation where I'm really picking and choosing. And I'd like to be able to not only be able to write live shows and have to pay sort of 10, 15 grand to not really do them. I'd like to be able to write either for radio, but the CDs bit restricted, and really can't do much stuff on it. But I'd like to be able to work on what I want to work on that and have some maybe do that. But I think so whatever form that takes, whether it be TV, radio, writing a book or writing shows, so mix, I like to keep it mixed up, but to be able to sort of pick and choose what I do.
Very good, very good. So round of Martin, sorry,
you can just vote for me.
How could I forget?
5 years' time, hopefully I'll be just coming back for big festivals like Edinburgh, maybe going over to Montreal or going over to Melbourne, but I will be back in South Africa. I'm buying a large farm in a cooperative environment with friends, and we're setting up schools for local children where we're going to be doing AIDS education, and we're getting computers all around the UK from large companies. We're taking them and having them rebuilt, sent out to communities, and we're basically going to live in a cooperative environment, educating, bringing people up in a nice, pleasant way in places like KwaZulu-Natal and the Transkei. And hopefully just writing enough and having 1 hour performances that you can take rather than doing standard gigs all the time and writing books and programs. And then there's a documentary series in South Africa we're going to be producing. So that's pretty much the plan that's underhead at the moment. Comedy is great fun, but I think comedy, stand up on a stage, is a stepping stone to doing the other creative things in your life you would really like to do. Whether it is, some people just say writing for television, writing for radio, whether it's even just writing a book or just writing that screenplay or a script and going off. I don't think I'll be doing stand-up in 5 years' time.
Cool. Right, excuse me, we have got 5 minutes for Q&A time. Has anybody in the audience got any questions for anybody on the panel that would like to? The burning questions. We've all been stunned into submission. No questions. Right, last quick question put around. Is there anything externally or internally that you think is stopping you from being more successful than you are at present? In my case, I think it's still, I feel I have quite a lot more. I'd have to go back to the previous question. In 5 years' time, I would also like to be doing 1 hour shows, taking around the country or around the world, in whatever case may be. Talking to people, to things that I think matter at the moment. Coming from a criminal background, both brothers have been to prison. I've managed to luckily escape. And my father, I don't know quite why he didn't end up in prison, but I just find it really interesting that I wake the audience up to the potential that they can use or not use of basically doing criminal activities. And that's one of the areas I really enjoy. Last year I did a show about postmodernism, and it was really interesting how the audience was really waking up to lots of ideas that came from that. It was funny. But the audience were just coming out really buzzing at the end of it, and they were going, oh, what about this idea and this cross-fertilisation, this idea? And that's what really got me excited, is actually taking it off in that area. And that's something I'd like to do in 5 years' time and be continuing to do that. And I think part of what I'm learning doing my own shows now is learning how to tell stories, learning how to tell anecdotes, learning how to convey sometimes quite difficult ideas across to the audience in a way that is really manageable but yet wakes them up to want to communicate back towards me in some shape or form. That's what I'd like to constantly work at and move forward with. What about you, Deborah?
What's stopping me?
Externally or internally?
Externally and internally, I am phenomenally lazy. A spoilt only child. And that is the one thing which everybody just constantly beats up on me. Every single report I had as a child was, well done, could do better. unless something instantly engages me, and so I can throw everything into it, if for any sort of work involved in it whatsoever. I'm a shirker. I think that's definitely going to hold me back if I don't. One thing I want to get out of Edinburgh. People say, well, what do you want to get out of it? You're spending all this money, what do you want to get out of it? I want to get an agent or a manager that's really going to kick me up the arse to get things done.
I'll do that.
That's
10%.
10%. 10% of nothing. Still nothing. So, yeah, that's what will hold me back. Application.
What about you, Luke?
Laziness, I think, it is a part of it. And also, I do find it quite difficult to really totally decide what I think about a lot of things. And that can be, and that can just kind of hold me back. I'm still making my mind up about a lot of things, you know. And something's obvious. And I want to be able to do stuff I want to deal with, like, political and sort of cultural commentary stuff. You know, I feel like I can deal with them too much. Understand I want to deal with them into life, so I'm really sort of setting my mind up about things. So I think I'm still learning life, you know. I'm 23, you know. There's plenty of things I don't feel like I've got a right to really sort of shoot my mouth out again. So I think it's a learning process, and that will come as I get older and get more life experience. So I think that's just something that will clear itself up as I go along with.
Thanks. And what about you, Timmy?
I'm not very good at small talk, and I'm even worse on stage. So I usually just give the facts, and that's okay when I'm doing a smaller set, like 15 minutes. But when someone does a long stand-up performance, like 45 minutes or an hour, I think they need to talk to the audience, kind of give them time to breathe, like not just jokes. So I think that's what's stopping me from doing longer sets. I need to learn the ability to just talk about like nothing, just ask someone in the audience about something, and just, like the instant reaction when I'm doing a show and I ask someone and they say something, I just go that's not good. So that's something I need to learn.
And what about you, Marcin?
Well, I think if I could stop watching Ground Force, Changing Rooms, Bargain Bloody Hunt and Countdown, I'd get a lot more done on this planet. But probably need to get off the crack cocaine and the heroin as well, but no, I'm joking. I don't watch Bargain Hunt. I smoke too much, and I've taken too much mushrooms over the last few years, to be quite honest, and it's amazing how I literally can look back and between the period of 24 to 28, other than a couple of digital photos, I have zero memories, basically, and I just realized how unbelievably lazy I've been. The last 6 months, I've picked up my game, and if I continue with the current momentum,
like, go for that girlfriend,
yeah,
then.
Yeah, just changed my life. The new one's even better, so, yeah. No, I think, basically, it's just, as people say, it's laziness and it's stagnation. It's like, I have a nice agent who's running the biggest shows here in the festival, so part of me has been a bit lazy, kind of going, with their baby acts. But I can say, oh, well, leave it to them, they'll sort it out. And they're not here, so I can say they kind of haven't, all right? And if I hadn't got my finger out and got my arse in gear, so to speak, I'd basically be really, really pissed off. I'm already pissed off with the lack of things that I've done. I'm already realizing how much I should have been writing more and how much more time I need to be spent physically focusing on getting new material, coming up with new ideas, learning interaction with the audience. All the different stagecraft that's involved is something that you can pick up all the time. But yet in stand-up comedy, you end up getting comfortable with a 20-minute set going, yeah, whatever, that'll be fine. I'm going to do another gig in another part. Ah, I can't be asked to stretch it out or do something new. So it's to get off your ass and just be a little bit more immediate. I'm going to write every day. That's my new thing.
It's your new thing?
It's my new thing, yeah.
New thing.
Yeah, and less of the shh, because it's not working.
It's not conducive, no, yeah. It's not success. So a quick vote, Luke Wright. Deborah Jane Appleby. Very good. And Tommy? Very good. And Martin Evans. It was the drugs, wasn't it? He must have been telling the truth on that one. Well, that's it for the moment. That's fantastic. Thank you very much for coming. If you want to talk to any of the comics or talk to them about their shows, can you go upstairs, because we've got another show moving in here at past 11? So go upstairs and chat to some more if you want to upstairs. And if you've got any questions, I'm sure all the acts would like to talk to you about their shows. Go and see them. Luke Wright in Poetry Boy Band at the Pleasant at what time?
4:40.
Deborah Jane Appleby?
Yeah, Appleby's Journey to the 21st Century at the Baby Belly, just at the bottom of the street.
At what time?
Where it is, 7:10. Every night but next Tuesday.
I'm exactly the same. 7:10 down here. Crime Comedy and Me every day except Tuesday. Tommy Wallamy's guest spots all over the place. But talk to him, he's got a little diary upstairs if you want to see what he does. Very, very good. And Martin Evans, you are in
competition with these two at 7:10 at the Pleasant Cellar Bar. Every night sold out for the last 6 nights, but 2 tickets left today at going quick. Pleasant Cellar, the same place as everybody else. So if you guys get a chance to come along, it's probably the best show that I'm in at that time, at that venue. So, yeah.
And 2 for 1 tomorrow and Monday.
We have no discounts.
I'm just desperate.